Adam Thielen, no longer one of us. Okay, he'll always be one of us. But he's going to take a little vacation. He's going to go to California. He's going to do the Minnesota thing, and he's going to go winter in a warm weather climate. Who can blame him for that? Let's get into the Thielen deal. Let's talk about Harrison Smith, Cousins. We will get to Bud Grant because we haven't talked about him on this show yet. This is the Viking Update Show with John Krasinski and Jim Suhan. Brandon Morton is our producer. Thanks for listening. Best way to listen, subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It is free. It's the easiest way to listen. Thanks to Aquarius Home Services, TSR Injury Law, and Star Bank. We are coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services studio. So let's get right into Adam Thielen. That is the freshest news that we can talk about. He gets a three-year deal worth up to $25 million to be a top receiver, to work with a team that has a good offensive line, that's about to draft a quarterback number one overall, and he's going to get at least $10 million this year. It's a pretty good deal, and I don't think anybody should begrudge him taking it. It's just a way better deal than he was going to get here.
Yeah, it was, Jim, and that was kind of we had discussed this in previous episodes, trying to handicap what exactly Adam Thielen was going to do when you look at his options out there and just kind of his mindset. And it was clear that the Vikings were in a position where they wanted a lot. They needed to claw back a lot of salary cap room, and there were going to be some players who were amenable to kind of playing ball with the Vikings and giving and maybe restructuring or taking pay cuts to make that happen. And then there were going to be some people who weren't. And always one of the things that was going to factor in to Adam Thielen's decision-making process was, what are his options on the open market? And you look at a 32-year-old receiver coming off of a somewhat down season. And I think that there was reason to wonder what he was going to be able to command on the open market. But he was set to make this year for the Vikings right around $12 million, $11.8 million. And so he ended up going and getting something with $14 million guaranteed. And so for me, like, that's a really good job by Adam's agent, Blake Barrett's, by everyone involved there, to get him to a place where he didn't have to take a pay cut. And so a lot of times when we see players move on, they will take pay cuts to go to a new team, but not to stay with their existing team. Adam didn't even have to take a pay cut at all. And so in that respect, from a financial perspective, it's a terrific option. And, you know, who knows what'll happen with Carolina from a competitive standpoint, but he's going to a division that's imminently winnable. And so I just think overall, I'm not surprised that he landed this deal, but I think that this is about as good of a deal from a financial perspective and from a role perspective that he could really hope to get at this stage of his career.
Oh, no doubt about it. And let's put his statistical performance. Of course, there are all kinds of sentimental reasons for wanting to be around here and be part of this team. But let's look at the stats. He had about a 700-yard receiving year last year. Over 17 games, you know what that is? That's like 40, 42 yards a game. Mm-hmm. You can replace that with a second tight end. I mean, he just was not a statistically important player on this team the way they ran their offense. He goes to Carolina. He might be the number one receiver. He might be the number two receiver. And maybe he's not going to play with somebody as polished as Kirk Cousins, but they're going to be balls in the air, and he's going to have a chance to catch a lot of them. So I think this is a slam dunk, easy decision for him. I also think that the Vikings can probably do better than 700 yards at that position. Whether it's KJ Osborne just taking it over or whether it's spreading around to other people, I think this is a win-win for both sides. Also, I saw it reported in my paper. It might have been reported elsewhere as well. That's where I saw it in the Star Tribune, is that he had asked for more input in game plans. And that's where if I'm O'Connell or Wes Phillips or the Quezzi or the Wilfs, that's where I say hard no. You have an offensive coordinator for a head coach. You have a really talented offensive coordinator as an offensive coordinator. You have a quarterback's coach. You have extra offensive coaches. You have quality control coaches. You have redundant coaches. And you have a quarterback and a number one receiver. You don't need – Adam's a smart player. You don't need another voice in that meeting room.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see Adam Thielen just saying, "Hey, I've been here for a very long time. I've been a good soldier. I want a little bit more say, or at least a little bit more assurances that my role isn't going to be diminished further." Because there, one thing that we saw from Adam Thielen last season, in all of my conversations with him, when there were many of them throughout the season, he played a big role in sort of helping usher Kevin O'Connell into the team. It was very clear that Adam Thielen was one of the players maybe most disgruntled at the end of the Zimmer era, maybe most unhappy with how things had gone and devolved, and maybe the gap between the head coach and the locker room in terms of connectivity and leadership and all of those things. And at every turn last season, we heard Adam Thielen raving about the way that Kevin O'Connell and this coaching staff had worked to involve players, to reconnect and rebuild bridges with the locker room, to establish a new environment of kind of camaraderie and teamwork and everything. And so I do think that Adam, as a tenured veteran, was very helpful in helping Kevin O'Connell establish that, which was very needed. Now, by the end of the season, I also got a sense that Adam was expecting a bigger role in the offense and maybe wanted more targets and wanted more attention to come his way. And whether that was the game plan that was going another way, or whether that was because Adam wasn't able to gain the separation and win the matchups as often as he did earlier in his career, maybe there's a combination of both there. But it doesn't surprise me that Thielen was looking for that, because he sees Justin Jefferson kind of ascending the way that he has. He sees TJ Hockenson come in and really establish himself as the clear-cut number two option in the passing game. And so I can understand why he said, "Hey, is there a place for me? Is there enough pie left for me to be satisfied from a competitive standpoint?" And clearly the Vikings said, "Adam, we're moving on." And so In this way, he gets to go now to Carolina, where he will be, now that DJ Moore is gone from there, he will be the leader of that room. And I'm sure that the Panthers will welcome a veteran presence and welcome his ideas on the offense, especially if you have a rookie quarterback, in terms of a good vet who will help tutor that guy and bring him along and maybe give Adam a bigger role in the offense. Like, that's great for him in Carolina. It just was unrealistic to happen here in Minnesota with all the other weapons that they have here.
Yeah, I mean, pretty rapid succession. He went from being a number one or co-number one receiver here to being a fourth option. Obviously Jefferson passed him and pretty much everything in the NFL. And then they bring in Hockenson. Hockenson immediately became the number two receiver. KJ Osborne is younger and just as productive and faster. Adam might have been the fourth receiver here, and he might not have been a particularly productive fourth receiver. So, again, I think it made sense for the Vikings to move on. I think Adam did very well to get the deal he got. But we have so much – we'll get back to Thielen and the offense. So much more news to get to today. Let's get to some of the other things going on. Once again, this is the Viking Update Show, part of TalkNorth.com. You can find all the shows and all the archives of the shows at TalkNorth.com. We have Russo LaPanta. We have John Krasinski on the Timberwolves. We have Joe Anderson, Mike Grimm, Dave Lee, tons of extra hockey stuff, including Bar Down Beauties. We have the Chin Music Show, which is a great show with Roy Smalley and Lavelle Neal. Tons of stuff. I can't even get to it all. Just check it out, TalkNorth.com, including our outdoor content. We do appreciate it. We are coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services studios, and we want to thank Aquarius Home Services.
Scott here, your Aquarius Home Services radio guy. Question: what makes water good water? As your local authorized Kinetico dealer, we're here to help everyone know that good water is just water. What I mean is that other stuff that isn't supposed to be in water isn't in your water. Stuff like iron, dissolved rock, or contaminants that maybe aren't so good for you. Concerned about what's in your water? Whether it's city or well, schedule your free water analysis at kineticomn.com. Aquarius, earning the right to be recommended.
And as you've heard on other shows, we are proud to work with TSR Injury Law. We trust them. We like them. If you are ever injured, call 612-TSR-TIME, 612-TSR-TIME. They will not charge you unless they win your case, and they win a lot of cases. That's why they've become one of Minnesota's best business success stories, 612-TSR-TIME. And if you're looking for a new bank, let me tell you that big banks aren't the only ones with mobile apps and convenient financial services. I'd like to tell you about Star Bank. Star Bank is an independent community bank in Minnesota. They're family-owned and treat customer relationships as a top priority. You're not a customer number at Star Bank, and they have no call center. It's just banking how it should be, a throwback to the good days. Mobile app, check, convenient services, you've got it. Check out Star Bank for yourself. For deposits and lending solutions, work with a local community bank that cares. Starbank.net, member FDIC and equal housing lender. Let's get to the Harrison Smith deal. I was on vacation last week, so we haven't caught up on all the news. This is a good place to be the clearinghouse for everything that has happened recently. Harrison Smith gets the deal done. I think, once again, I think this is a deal that makes sense for both sides. The Vikings get a good financial deal. They also get to keep a great player, a great Viking who I think still has something left and I think will benefit from the change of defensive coordinators.
Yeah, I think that was the key, Jim. When you look at who they were going to keep and who they were going to say goodbye to, they had to make the right decisions in terms of who can still play, because this team is kind of in this transition period now where they've, as Kwesi Odofo-Mensah put it, they want to have this competitive rebuild, quote unquote. But I do think that it feels like with a lot of the moves that have been made over this free agency period, it's trending a little more toward the rebuild than the competitive, in terms of at least recognizing that, hey, maybe last year was as good as it was and as fun as it was and as, you know, impressive and maybe even unexpected as it was, they understand that there is still a lot of work to be done. They are not one or two players away from going to be in a Super Bowl contender. So they are kind of operating this offseason like a team that needs to get really a lot younger and a lot more dynamic and maybe take some lumps along the way while they do that. Well, it's clear that they recognize that Harrison Smith is still a player that has some real big plays left in him. And I think he did have really good moments last season. He also had a couple of moments where you look at and said, that doesn't look great at all. But by doing what they did with Harrison Smith and by Harrison Smith agreeing to kind of go through the restructure that he did, I think it shows that Smith really wants to be here. He doesn't want to pick up and leave at this point in his career. And the Vikings believe that he still has some game left in him, and that transition from Ed Donatell to Brian Flores will be a big help for Harrison Smith's game. What you kind of heard through last season, and certainly as we did the postmortems on what happened with this defense, I think that there's an impression that the Donatell system sort of took away a lot of Harrison Smith's creativity, a lot of his kind of ability to freelance and to kind of read and act instinctually and maybe not maximize just the way that he anticipates things at this stage of his career. And so he was almost kind of put into a box that may have been limiting to him. So I get the impression that Flores and his more aggressive approach is going to maybe let Harrison Smith off the leash a little bit more. Now we'll see if he can still keep up physically and all of those things. But clearly this was a player who might be in the Hall of Fame when his playing days are done. And I think that they really wanted to do everything they could to try and keep him around and maybe even through the end of his career and not see him play in another uniform.
Yeah, I think that's a very logical way to look at it. I can't believe that he was put in the best position to succeed last year. And I'm guessing that Flores, I think he and Flores will be good for each other. I think Flores will trust him, will put him in position to succeed. I think Harrison Smith is still capable of making a defensive coach look good at this stage. And listen, in future weeks here, when we have slower news weeks, we are going to do some really intense looks at the remake of this defense and how things are going to function and what this team has accomplished in the offseason. This week, we just have a lot of news to get to, so we're going to keep going down the list. Kirk Cousins works with the Vikings to alter the nature of one of his bonuses to help with the salary cap. It's really kind of a no-lose deal. He doesn't lose any money, and he gets to help the team out. That's the way I look at it. Do you know any more about it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the one thing that will be interesting whenever we hear from Kirk Cousins is I think that what he really wants and wanted was a long-term deal to stay here. I you know, from talking to people who know Kirk well, from listening to Kirk talk about what he wants out of his career and how he's felt about this organization and about certainly Kevin O'Connell and the new staff and everything is like I think that. If he could have waved a magic wand and just had exactly what he wanted, Kirk would have gotten a deal that would have kept him, you know, it basically ensured that he stayed in purple for another 3 to 4 years. And then by that time, he can start really looking at, does he want to play till he's 40 or does he want to kind of walk away eventually at the end of that contract? And the Vikings did not give him that. What they did give him was the ability to control his own destiny the way that he has better than any other NFL player in the history of the NFL in terms of contracts, in terms of setting himself up for more and bigger paydays should everything go well. And so he's going to benefit financially, provided there isn't some sort of, you know, catastrophic injury that he suffers. He's going to benefit greatly financially from the way that this is structured. So they didn't do wrong by him at all. The Vikings didn't. By any means, this was a nice compromise, I think. But what I would be interested to see if Kirk is going to be completely honest and transparent about him wanting to say, hey, why didn't you just give me this longer term deal so I can stay here and be here? Because I still think, Jim, that this the way that this deal now is structured with the two void years at the end, it almost demands that the Vikings look at a quarterback in the draft at some point and have a plan for something beyond next season to make happen at quarterback. Otherwise, there's a potential to be a real gap if Kirk Cousins finishes out his contract this next year and then goes somewhere else. And so that could bring a little tension into things. We'll see how they handle all of that, but in the end, no one should shed a tear for Kirk Cousins. He's making a lot of money. He will position himself to make even more money. But I think that in the end, I think he really wanted to just be here and just set down the roots and be the guy here and be able to ride off into the sunset. But I don't think that's going to happen right now.
No, and there's some risk in letting this play out. But I also think there's logic in saying, okay, let's not overreact to Cousins playing well for 1 year and really having some magic happen at the end of games, which I do give Cousins credit for, but also, you know, it could also be a one-off. We don't know if there's going to be a regression to the mean in that regard. Also, a year from now, not only will you have had a really good look at Cousins in the second year of an offense with excellent receivers and excellent skill positions around him, position players around him. But also the TV deals coming down the pike, I think are going to raise the salary cap in a way that would make getting a new deal done with Cousins much more simple. So yeah, it should make everyone uneasy to not have a guaranteed future at the quarterback position, because we know what happens if you don't, but there is some logic in readdressing it next year.
Yeah, and I think like that is one element of it that maybe has been underplayed in terms of we saw what the Giants did with Daniel Jones. And basically like, look, if you play just so well that we cannot afford not to keep you, we're going to sign you to a big deal after that. And so I would anticipate that if Kirk Cousins has a season similar to last year and keeps coming through in the clutch and keeps making Justin Jefferson an all-world receiver and keeps benefiting from, you know, having Jefferson and Hockenson and whoever else they add and all of that, and raising the level of this offense, and maybe, you know, then goes on and wins a playoff game or you know, kind of parlays all of the success last year from a team aspect and takes it a step further next season, then you can still just pay him. It's just that it seems like the Vikings said, hey, we don't have to pay you now. We could use a little bit more flexibility built into what we're doing to help us. And if we get to a point where we like quite literally have to pay you going forward, if you've just been that good, then we'll do that. And we'll try to do that. And so, and given what we know about Kirk Cousins, you know, loving Minnesota and wanting to be here, like, I could see all of that working out in the long term at all. This does not have to be goodbye to Kirk Cousins, but I do think it is a situation where the Vikings were like, we need to see just a little bit more here before we fully commit, and we want to leave our options open should that regression to the mean happen.
Yes, I want to get the three more prominent names. The final will be Bud Grant. Dalvin Cook, there was kind of a semi-deadline on Friday where he was going to get a bonus if he's still on the roster. They still have him on the roster. To me, this indicates they really think that eventually they're going to be able to trade him someplace, and that's worth holding on to him right now.
Yeah, it seems that way, Jim. You know, they signed Alexander Mattison to not a big deal by any stretch of the imagination, but that was when they did re-sign him, that really said to me that that really could indicate that Dalvin Cook is heading elsewhere, because if you're Mattison, wouldn't you be looking for a more featured role somewhere else if you could find it? Maybe he's under the impression that he will get more touches and maybe even be the lead back this year. So he ended up re-signing with the Vikings. And yes, yeah, so then it just gets down to money as well. Now, yeah, why would they have paid that bonus that came in on Friday? It must be to just kind of keep their options open heading into the draft. Looking at other situations, I still would be very surprised if Dalvin Cook is on this roster once we get through the draft and once all the free agency is settled and you go into the offseason program. It just seems like his days here are numbered now, but who is going to be the team that steps up and comes to get him? That to me is a question, but it just seems like the Vikings are trying to hold on to their chips and see if they can get something for him of value before, you know, saying goodbye to him.
What are you thinking about Za'Darius Smith at this point?
So that's another interesting one. They brought in Marcus Davenport, a young defensive end, certainly nowhere near as accomplished as Za'Darius Smith. But it has been interesting, Jim, because the messaging from Za'Darius Smith in on social media and everything else has been of I'm getting out of here, but it doesn't seem like the Vikings yet are really committing to that yet. I think that there are people within the building that probably would like to see Za'Darius Smith come back, especially if they don't get everything they want from a defensive line standpoint in the draft. If they don't address all of the depth at that position further, I know they like Za'Darius Smith. I know that they were loving his production early on in the season and trying to find ways to kind of keep him healthy and impactful going down the stretch. But I that one's a little bit harder for me to read is I think Za'Darius is expecting to go somewhere else, expecting to land somewhere, maybe on a Super Bowl contender where he is kind of more of a situational pass rusher type. But so far the Vikings don't seem to be agreeing to that. And there could be some things that work out there that maybe he does stick around.
There would be nothing wrong with having three dynamic pass rushers on the same roster. You can do a lot with that.
For sure. Yeah, exactly. And especially, you know, when you add a guy like Davenport, does that reduce the workload and the burden on Za'Darius Smith? And can you keep him fresher throughout an entire season by limiting his snap count? I think that he became so important to what the Vikings were doing because he was really productive early on, while Danielle Hunter wasn't really kind of finding his sea legs, that maybe he ran out of gas as the season went on, and you know that knee started acting up and stuff. But if they could get to a situation where they can afford it, and you can kind of mix and match Smith in there with a healthy rotation at defensive end, that would maximize your ability to get the most out of Za'Darius Smith, and maybe it makes it more enticing to keep him around.
Agreed. Now let's get to the biggest news you could possibly have in Vikingdom. Of course, I was on vacation last week. We didn't do a show last week, so we haven't talked about it yet. And I just wanted to, and listen, so many people have done wonderful tributes to Bud. We're not going to break any new ground here. I just want to say that, I still remember coming to Minnesota to cover the Vikings in 1990, and Bud was just sitting in an office, just a little Spartan office down at the end of the hall at Winter Park, and you know, pumping gas at the company pump and hanging out in his flannel shirt and shooting the breeze. And you know, he had that, he wanted to be the stern guy, but he also had that twinkle in his eye. You know, he really couldn't carry it off too much if he wasn't in football mode. And I just, probably the story that always resonates with me when it comes to Bud Grant. And listen, everybody else can tell you about the great coaching, and we all know what the record is. We all know what his personality was like. We all know how tough he was. What I remember, I was talking to his son, Mike Grant, once, and he said, yeah, we thought, you know, there was a time when it just felt like Bud was going to go off into the woods and never be seen from, never be seen or heard from again. That, you know, like maybe after, I think it was after his playing career, he just really wanted to get a rifle and a fishing pole and go live in a cabin and not interact with human beings and just live off the land the rest of his life. And obviously people talked him out and said, hey, you could really have a nice coaching career. You can make a lot of money. You can win a lot of games. You can really build a life this way. And they talked him into staying among the civilized. But there was a time when Bud might have just walked off and we would not be having this conversation right now.
Yeah, I think I read Dennis Anderson's great piece in the Star Tribune on Sunday, and obviously he's the great outdoors writer for the Strib, and had a wonderful friendship with Bud and all sorts of fishing and hunting adventures with him. And I think the way that he put it was, you know, he was a hunter and a fisherman who happened to be a football coach and not the other way around. And, you know, I think even back then, where before the true explosion of professional sports and the NFL in particular on society in general, it still was marked by coaches who were control freaks, who were lorded over franchises, who were completely obsessed with the job at hand and consumed by it. And when you hear stories about Bud, he was never consumed by it. As good as he was, as great as his teams were, as hard as they worked, all of those things, he had a perspective about what it was to be a football coach that was different and that was unique. And it was funny because I think that there were contrasts with him, right? I mean, in one respect, he had that, but then also he was one of the guys who really lobbied for better contracts and better pay for players when he was a player, that would go to the CFL because he didn't get what he thought he was worth in the United States from a playing perspective. You look at, he would He didn't let the team have heaters on the sidelines at Met Stadium. They practiced outside. And in some respects, she's like, man, this guy is a taskmaster. This guy is one of those Lombardi like, hard asses. But then you talk to the Carl Ehlers of the world and the Jim Marshalls and Paul Krauses, and they all say that he had such a humanity about him, that he had one of the shorter training camps in the league, that he didn't, really grind these guys to a pulp. Now, he was demanding and he was exacting and he was, quietly domineering, but he also had fun on the job. He cracked jokes. I think he made people feel comfortable. And I think that allowed him to do the more draconian things, the cold winter things, and demand more out of his players and respond to him because they knew that he was doing it out of their best interests. And so, you hear all of those stories and just like a true original, a complete legend. And the one thing, like, I obviously came along much after he was on the Vikings sideline and all that. So I never was around him that way, but you could always just feel his presence when he was in the room, when he was watching a practice, when he was kind of walking around that building. It was, you just, that's Bud. And there was such a reverence for him that you couldn't help but feel the energy change when he was present and around things. And, they don't make him like him anymore. And he was one of a kind, and he will definitely be missed around here.
One more note on that. I worked with Sid Hartman for decades, and mythology was built up around Sid that contained a lot of lies and misconceptions. And there were a lot of things that people said about Sid that absolutely were not true. There are a lot of things Sid said about Sid that were absolutely not true. The one thing that Sid said that was self-aggrandizing but was also 100% accurate was that he and Bud Grant were close friends.
Yes.
And not just that, Sid got Bud through college. Bud was broke in college. Sid made sure he had money for food. Sid would give him money to take his future wife to the movies. Sid took care of Bud. Bud never forgot it. They really did love each other. That part of the Sid mythology absolutely was true. And it's fascinating because Bud, again, he tried to act like a gruff guy. He tried to act like somebody who was above that kind of stuff. He loved Sid Hartman. That part is absolutely true.
Yeah. I mean, just the connection was obvious. I mean, picking him to induct him into the Hall of Fame and all of those other things were amazing. And one of the things that I noticed both about Sid and about Bud, that, this is going to sound like I'm making fun, and I'm not at all. You remember, Jim, when at Winter Park, we used to be able to eat lunch there in the team cafeteria on Wednesdays. And after the team had eaten, we'd be able to come in and have a meal there. At the end of those meals, often you would see Bud come into the cafeteria and grab whatever was the main course that day. I mean, one time I saw a pork chop. There's other time, there's all sorts of different stuff. And he'd put it in his satchel and he'd take it home. And I would look at that, and at first I laughed at it, like, how this famous NFL coach is coming in and he's putting pork chops in his satchel and heading home. But then, like, the more that you realize it and the more you talked about to people who lived through, who came up as youth when they did through the depression and all of that, is you just got an understanding for, they understood scarcity and they understood what it was like to really, really struggle and not be able to put food on the table and not, not be able to find everything you want in the grocery store. You know, during the pandemic and the supply chain issues, we started to see a little bit of an inconvenience that way, or I can't find this or I can't find that. Back then it was, there is nothing. And even if there is, we don't have the money to pay for it. And so that kind of image is always in my mind of this, you know, this man who as a boy came up through the hardest of, you know, most difficult circumstances, and that never left him. Like, I think that's part of the hunting and fishing as well. It was, yes, it was entertainment and it was fun for him, but it was also a means of getting extra food, of doing all sorts of, you know, of doing things to provide for his family. And so that sort of worldview and that experience was just something that has always resonated with me about Bud, and really Sid was what came up through that as well. So, you know, just a completely different time, completely different men for sure.
Thanks, John. Thanks to Brandon. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. We'll be back next week, and it's the Vikings. There'll be more to talk about.